Welcome to Behind the Lore, your backstage tour of the research it takes to make each episode of Lore Podcast. I'm Harry Marks, and today I'm sitting down with Alex Robinson. We're exploring the research she did for Lore Legends Episode 20, Food and Folklore. Today, Alex and I discuss the rules of fairy food, ghosts eating candy, and some really disturbing dinner parties. Your support keeps us going, so once again, we're thrilled to have you behind the scenes with us. Please join us for a new episode of Behind the Lore. Hello and welcome to Behind the Lore. I'm here with Alex Robinson, and we are talking today about Lore Legends Episode 20, Food and Folklore. Alex, welcome.
Thank you, Harry.
Lovely to have you here. We have a lot to talk about, so let's dive right in. We're going to start with Act 1, as we always should with a four-act episode. Act 1 deals with fey or fairy food, with a healthy bit of it talking about how fey food can trap a human in the fairy world. But there was also quite a bit of lore omitted from the final script just due to space and time concerning fey food curses. Can you walk us through some of those?
Yes, absolutely. So just like Harry said, not all fey food will trap you in their realm. Sometimes it'll just curse you to be miserable or get sick or die, or often all three. So the most famous example of this is actually not folklore, but a poem. And anyone who has ever studied the history of the fey mythology, the fey lore, has read this poem before, The Goblin Market by Christina Rossi. And I'm not going to walk through the plot at the moment because most people listening to this are actually already going to be familiar with this poem. But bare bones, two sisters find a goblin market, which goblin count as fey in a lot of these stories. And one sister is completely enticed and taken in, eats some fruit, can never stop thinking about it, totally withers away basically to a husk of herself. The other sister eventually has to go and find the goblin market again and get her more fruit to break this curse. But her sister was about to die. So that's sort of the general theme, is they can only think about that food forever and ever until they die. They're not going to find joy or fulfillment from any other food, and they are not going to want to eat anything. So going into actual folklore, there is a super dark story from the island of Inishark. And this is actually, it's been debated if this is real oral folklore or if the author of the book that I got it from had made it up herself. And I don't think that we're ever going to know. This was written back in the 19th century. But she says that it was real folklore from this Irish island. And basically, it's this idea that some fey folk are actually basically descendants of, you know, Satan. They are really, really evil, evil creatures that'll steal people for their own amusement. And it's a story of a very unlucky young man who is carried off in his sleep by these evil folk. He awakens, he's surrounded by these laughing, ugly, evil creatures because, you know, ugliness and evilness often coincide in folklore. They say, okay, you're going to help us in the kitchens. One of them brings this unlucky young man to the kitchens where he sees a hag, an old woman, being hung by her arms and she's being skinned. And the man who has brought this youth to the kitchen says, okay, we're going to chop her up into bits and you're going to help us. And the young man is like, oh my God, no, absolutely not. They say, well, she was actually really evil in her life and her soul will never find rest after we chop her off. So you should be thanking us for doing this to her. And the human man passes out. He's like, oh my God, I can't do this. Passes out. He wakes up and he is in a banquet hall. And there's no hag being served, thank God. The table is instead covered in fruit and chicken and all this other food. A prince at the banquet tells the young man, okay, you have to eat something. And the boy says, I can't. This food hasn't been blessed by a priest. Yeah, there is often religion brought into these stories about the Fae. They are usually not considered to be of God. So this is definitely a story that brings in Christian morals.
I was going to say, it's like a warning story for Christian youth. Oh.
Yes, absolutely. Don't be too greedy. Don't take from those who are not godly. There's a lot of messages that come in with this. So the prince says you have to at least drink the wine. And the wine looked super tempting. So this unlucky guy drank all the wine. It was the most delicious thing he had ever tasted. But it doesn't keep him there. A lot of the stories that you chose to wrote about kept people stuck there. This doesn't keep him there. The room totally goes dark and then he wakes up in the human world. But he hadn't actually escaped the Fae realm in all the ways that mattered. The fairy wine stayed in his memory, in his veins. It just ruined his life. It was like he was constantly under this spell, this fever, and he couldn't think of anything else. He pined away for it. He was constantly seeking ways to get back to the Fae and drink some more of it. And he was never content ever again. And then he died early. Unclear if he like starved himself to death or if he just passed away from sheer desperation and sadness, but that's sort of a common theme. If they're not keeping you there, they're going to curse you. Either way, don't take food from strangers in the Fae lands, please. It's a very bad idea.
Well, it sounds like the prototype DARE program, like don't touch drugs or you're going to crave them day and night and they're going to ruin your life and then you'll die young.
This is the very Christian historical version of that. There's this idea of don't accept strange food from people in strange lands. Don't be greedy because you never know where that greed is going to lead you. Don't partake in things that are not consecrated by God. There's a lot of common themes woven throughout the years that sort of lead you back to this idea of only take what you know, only take what God has given you, and don't be greedy, because then you're going to be cursed forever.
Before I jump into a couple questions from now, I do want to talk about the fairy food itself, because you did go into quite a bit of description about the fairy food, not just its effects. So what was the fairy food like, and how is it different from human food?
So there are disagreements on this, but most believe that no matter what, fairy food is going to screw over humans. But what it consists of has been disagreed on throughout the years. A lot of people believe that fairies actually steal human food, but not in the way that you would think. It's still on our tables, but they steal the essence of it, the substance, the nutrients, or they'll steal cattle and sheep and goats or the agricultural harvest. But if they're stealing it from your table, something you've already prepared, the nutrients will be gone. But if they're stealing it from your land, if it's cattle, if it is, the wheat harvest for that year, then it's going to up and disappear. And there was this like old Irish belief that you had to sprinkle holy water around your butter churn and light a fire under it so that fairies would never steal it. They'd never take it, which I guess if your animals are dying or being stolen, if your food didn't turn out the way you thought, if your fruit is watery, if things aren't filling you up the way they should, this would be an easy explanation, right? The Fae have stolen this food. But then others say that they have special food that grows underground for them, and there's no nourishment in it, and it's very poor quality, so they like to steal our food.
Interesting. So it almost feels like a variation on the changeling stories of the children who were snatched from their cribs and then replaced with a goblin or fairy version of the child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, everything that humans make is going to be better than what the Fae make.
We've talked about the curses of fairy food, what fairy food is like, but we also learn not to accept food from fairies in the fairy world. So what are the best practices when accepting fairy food? when it's presented to us in the real world?
Well, you should accept it in the real world. If a fairy appears in front of you in the real world and gives you food, you need to eat it. That is the best practice. So usually their hospitality will manifest itself through food, or their thanks will manifest itself through food. There are stories of men who say, oh, I'm so hungry. And then a woman appears in front of them and is like, here, eat this butter. You know, this mysterious woman in green. They get suspicious of it. They say, no, I will not eat anything that this strange lady who just appeared out of thin air gave me. And then the fairy curses them and they die soon after. So there's that idea. But there is also sort of, there's stories of fairies giving food to kind-hearted people that they really like. There's a particular story of a woman who will be given, she's given fairy butter by fairies who parade by her home on occasion because she's kind and good-hearted. She uses it. She doesn't ever consume it herself. She uses it for household purposes is what it says. So, like, they're cool with that.
What does that mean? Like greasing the hinges on the doors?
I have no idea. It just said household purposes. I was like, well, I guess. I don't know what fairy butter would have been used for around the house. My favorite story that involves taking fairy food in real life involves a farmer. He heard a child crying. He finds the child. The child was playing with a little spade and it had broken, and the farmer fixes it, not realizing he had found the child next to a pixie mound, which is basically just a hill that fairies were believed to live under. And the kid was apparently a fairy kid, because when the farmer walked by that area later, there was a cake waiting for him. And his friends were like, oh my God, don't eat that cake. And the farmer was like, I think it's a good idea to eat this cake. He ate the cake. And then he said it was proper good and called out good night to ye, and he prospered for the rest of his life. So that was the fairies saying thank you for helping this child, and you know, now we're going to give you good luck forever. If you find fairies stealing your food and you let them, there's a story of a woman who was always seeing fairies, like a fairy go into her barn at night and steal her cow's milk. And when she confronted the fairy said, oh my God, my child is sick. I just need this milk to make it better. Please let me use it for another month. And I promise that it can be yours forever. And so the woman said yes. And after the month was up, the cow's milk flowed like a ton the rest of its life. So there's this idea of you be generous to them, they'll be generous back to you. You be kind to them, they'll be kind back to you. And maybe they'll try to give you something for no reason at all. If it's in the human world, you got to take it.
So let's jump into Act Two, which dealt with a lot of food traditions out of the fairy world. A lot of food traditions, many concerning families. And you did a lot of research on two big topics. So we'll start with the first topic, which is the Hungry Ghosts Festival. And then we'll jump into Hell Banquets, which I want to talk about. So what is the Hungry Ghost Festival?
So dining with the dead doesn't always just apply to like Dia de los Muertos. The Hungry Ghosts Festival is an Asian celebration. It takes place in the seventh month of the lunar year, so it's usually in August. It is celebrated in China, Japan, and other East and Southeast Asian countries. It's drawn from Buddhism and the belief that is in this seventh month, the gates of the underworld are open so the souls of the suffering can wander about. And they're super discontented. They have no families. No one will pay tribute to them after they've died. Or maybe they're super malicious. They were just evil in life. Or they were even suicide victims. So they like to cause problems, these discontented ghosts. They're super mischievous. And you kind of need to buy them off so that they don't bother you. And the best way to do this is with food. And so that's what the Hungry Ghost Festival is for. So basically, it's derived from Buddhist traditions, Taoist traditions. There is a very, very old story behind the celebration that comes from Indian scripture, the Mahayana, and was adapted for China. Basically, the story is that one of Buddha's proteges wants to go find his deceased parents. He searches for them in heaven. He searches for them in hell. He has this huge journey through the underworld, and he eventually finds his mom being tortured with metal spikes. He tries to feed her because she's ravenous, but all the food bursts into flames before it reaches her lips. And eventually, Buddha takes pity on the whole deal, and he says that Mulien, this person, his protege, needs to provide a feast for the hungry ghosts, the ones who are suffering, on the 15th day of the 7th lunar year month. The Buddhist monks would act as intermediaries between the living and the dead, and they would offer the food to the ghosts, which I guess would stop it from bursting into flames. So once they could eat these ghosts, they would continue on through the afterlife and maybe even go to heaven. So on this 15th day, Buddhist and Taoist priests, they chant liturgies and they perform rituals, and they offer paper, clothes, and other gifts to the ghost. And then they finish it by offering buns and candy to the ghosts, and the watching crowd will get buns and candy afterwards for themselves. And then, so that's like the official feeding of the hungry ghosts. But in some communities, the celebrations of feeding the ghosts, it lasts for a really, really long time. There's parades and operas and parties, and people will put food at gravesite altars, or even in the street in altars. It's always going to be uncooked rice and noodles, unpeeled fruits, raw meat. You can't bring hot food into a graveyard because that could attract even more hungry ghosts, and they could overwhelm you with trouble and mischief. But yeah, that's sort of the idea of it. It's a really big deal. I experienced it for a bit when I was living in South China, and it's a pretty cool festival.
When you were doing your research, was there any discussion about possible connections to the origins of Halloween? Because it feels like the two of them go hand in hand of, you know, feeding ghosts candy.
No, it's weirdly completely separate from Halloween. It's completely separate from Halloween. There is, that I could find in my research and that I've heard in my own time, you know, living over there, there is no real connection at all. Our Halloween wow. really just comes from the Irish tradition and not mm-hmm. from this at all, which I think brings up questions of why do we always feel this need to, throughout history and throughout the world, to sort of almost celebrate or ward off mischief from ghosts with sweet things or with food or with celebration. I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's a really, really cool thing to ponder and to think about. And even if other traditions involving death and ghosts seems odd to us, I think it's important to look at our own traditions that might seem odd to them and to find the correlation between them, because I think that we're all just searching for comfort in dealing with the unknown and dealing with death.
Interesting. There was, I can't remember if it was this legend or another Lore Legends episode, it might have been this one, about the restaurant that's haunted by a ghost. It was this one. Okay. For anyone listening, I write for Cabinet of Curiosities and Lore Legends, and when I finish a story and give it to Aaron, it evaporates from my brain, and I honestly forget half the stuff I write because there's just so much churning. So I will never remember what's in what story. But the story in this episode of the ghost haunting the restaurant and how they set up a table for him and they leave out food and drink in case he shows up. It's that same kind of thing, it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, there's a story who, if you all have heard this, because I think that we wrote about this for Lore Bites, that's fine. I actually am the one who pitched this story for Lore Bites, but there's a restaurant in Charleston that I've actually been to where they say that there is a ghost. These two sisters had lived there for most of their lives together. One of them died well before the other. The last one was very lonely. And so they see the ghost of the last one who had lived there the longest and was the loneliest a lot. People will hear her crying in the bathroom, sometimes see her crying in the bathroom. And sometimes she'll just show up as they're closing the restaurant and they'll seat her and they give her a menu and they say, okay, I'm gonna go tell the kitchen, you know, it's gonna go see what they can make you because we're about to close up. And when they come back, she's gone. So there is very much an idea of ghosts sticking around for food and I think in some ways almost company. There was this idea at that restaurant, not the one you wrote about, but the one I've just spoken about, that she was really just looking for companionship, and she was always smiling at people when they seated her and just seemed to be happy to be there. And I think that that's really beautiful and really sad at the same time.
It is, and it's a terrible way to segue into the final topic, which is hell banquets. So I love I both love and am terrified of the idea of hell banquets. Can you explain what a hell banquet is?
Yes, I can. And this was kind of like, weirdly, like my least favorite part to research for this episode. Mm-hmm. So I'll run through it. But basically, it's a big prank dinner for all your friends to make them feel like they might die soon. So it originated in 89 AD in ancient Rome from a banquet hosted by Emperor Domitian. And I'm not going to get into all the reasons why, but the Roman Senate hated this guy. They hated him so much. And so he threw this big banquet, and it was mostly senators who were invited. And when they arrived, basically the room was completely black, and like the floor, the table, everything. And they were each assigned a seat with a personalized gravestone. All the food was dyed black, and it was food that's traditionally offered at grave sites. The senators were completely terrified. They were certain that this was all just like an elaborate setup for them to all get their throats cut. And Emperor Domitian was having the time of his life. He was just talking about things that related to death and slaughter the entire time. And they were all convinced once he put them in carriages to send them home, they all thought that they were going to be taken into back alleys and be assassinated, basically. But he never did. And the emperor ended up sending them all their personal gravestones from the banquet. And they did eventually assassinate him, actually, a few years down the line. And I wouldn't be surprised if this hoax started to get that idea moving in some of their brains.
It has such a Game of Thrones feel to it of like, I could kill you, not going to do it today, but just know I can. And here's your parting gift to show.
Oh, it was absolutely a power play on the emperor's part. And I think it was reminding them who really had the power in this relationship. I think he sounded like a cool guy. Read up on the policies that he did. I think he sounded pretty awesome. I would be his friend. But this isn't the last one. This is the last banquet. This is just the one that kicked it off. There were a few that took place during the Italian Renaissance. And I'm not going to get into the details of all of them. But it was sort of a similar deal where guests were confused. The room was dark. There's skulls and skeletons and bones on the table. At another one, there's this idea of like lizards and snakes crawling all over the table. At one, they entered through like the jaws of Cerberus, and there was someone dressed up like Satan going around and talking to everybody and making them feel uncomfortable while the god Pluto watched on. It was this big thing. Basically, it's believed that these hell banquets that took place in the Italian Renaissance were actually political statements against the Medici family. So the one of them, actually several cardinals were Medicis. One of them actually threw up. He was so nervous and scared at this banquet, he threw up from it. And then another one was believed to have been done as a reminder to the Medici family where they will end up for their wickedness, i.e. H-E double hockey sticks. So they were super elaborate. They were put on by noble families who I think were super bold to have done that. If you all know anything about the Medici family, you know you really shouldn't mess with them. And this was absolutely messing with them. But it wasn't always a political statement. So the last guy who was really known for these, I do not speak French. I am so sorry to any and all French speakers. His name was Grimaud de Lavernier, and he lived during Napoleon's era, and he was one of the first world's first food critics. But he basically had a terrible relationship with his family, which would inspire him to pull these hell banquets, these sort of prank dinners, to get back at his family and their friends. And he would invite them to these terrible dinners where they were basically given inedible food or not given food at all. And there were coffins behind their seats and there was a funeral theme, and they were kept there for a very long time. Like, they were trapped there while they watched his own personal friends actually get food and have fun. And it was sort of macabre. You know, there were dancing skeletons and such. His very last one that he threw was a fake funeral. His wife sent out invitations to his funeral, and it was a 4 p.m. funeral. And a lot of mourners were like, oh, to go to that, I'd have to miss dinner. So they just decided not to, which I think says that he was a pretty unlikable fellow, honestly. Mm-hmm. But there was a coffin completely draped in black. There was a hearse, and the guests were waiting for ages until he showed up at his own funeral. And he was like, surprise, this was a test to see who my real friends were, because you were going to miss dinner, and that seems like a fate worse than death. And so thanks for showing up to my funeral, even though you'd miss dinner. So he gave them a dinner. And he just seems a little unstable. But I think, I think the moral of this story is that if you want to get back at someone, if you have something to say, a little subtle message to give one of your frenemies, I think that throwing a dinner party where they get their own coffin or gravestone is a great idea. Serve their food in a skull, have some melting black and red candles, you know, the works. Make them feel like they're going to die, and I feel like you're going to get your point across.
Well, look, before we had Charles Dickens and the three ghosts scaring rich, powerful jerks into being better people, we had hell banquets.
I think I would like to attend one. I think I'd even like to help throw one. I don't think I would want to be out of the loop. I don't think I'd want to show up to what I thought was going to be a normal dinner party. And then I think that would be kind of cool. Never mind. All of these seem to have extremely malicious intent behind them and pretty, sometimes really big political statements. So I think that my goal is to stay politically irrelevant enough to feel like I'm not going to be assassinated if there is a cool looking gravestone behind my chair at a table one day.
Yeah. No, it's I would not want to be out of the loop on that either. I would feel like Joe Pesci in Goodfellas, where they take him into the house. He thinks he's going to be a made man, and then they open up the door and there's no one there, and he realizes, oh no, and then they whack him. That's what I would feel like.
Yeah, you know, stay out of the mob, stay out of politics, and you too can enjoy a hell banquet instead of throwing up at one like the Medici Cardinals did.
Thank you, Alex, for educating us on the intricacies of just terrible dining experiences. And that does it for today's episode of Behind the Lore. A big thank you to Alex for spending time with me today. Did you know Lore and Lore Legends are part of a larger network of shows called Grim and Mild? And you can learn more about those shows and everything we do over at grimandmild.com. On behalf of the entire Lore team, thank you for your constant and generous support and for letting us tell you our stories. And until next time, thanks for listening.